I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Both the Cubs and White Sox swept their weekend series. What does that tell you about each team, and do you see more similarities or weaknesses?
Yeah, you know, I think it tells me that both teams, and I know this is just an old adage, but you really have to beat the teams that you're better than. Number one, to compete in any sport, you got to be better than a number of teams. And number two, you got to beat them when you can. So sweeps on both sides of town over teams that you're better than, and you have to be better than if you want to be good, then I think that's a great sign. I mean, we can sit here and talk about starting pitching. There's some similarities. They're both getting good starting pitching now. The White Sox have turned it a little bit. I think the White Sox bullpen is better, but I do think the Cubs are working through their bullpen, and maybe they're having to dismiss more guys, but they're figuring out what their bullpen is. So that's a good sign moving forward. And we'll see how that works out for them in the long run. It's a scary one. The other thing that jumps to mind is, I believe going into yesterday's game, the Cubs were tied for the most home runs in baseball. The White Sox had the best batting average. So it's also a question of being able to get a hit with runners in scoring position, which the Sox have struggled with much more than the Cubs. Both teams are able to score a lot of runs, as we saw over the weekend, and certainly the Cubs at the top of that. I think they were averaging like 6-point-something runs a game, which is extraordinary. So, and they won a couple of games closer than that, so that's good to see. I think that you got to be able to win one-run games. You got to be able to beat teams that you're supposed to beat, and we'll see where we end up with this, but a lot of fun in Chicago baseball this weekend.
I think it told us that both teams are capable of meeting the expectations that were set for them at the beginning of the season. And the Sox have responded to a 1-4 start where everybody started to doubt them. And I think we were skeptical, and there were a lot of things not to like about the way they opened. But over the weekend, they did what they had to do. Good teams sweep bad teams. Good teams dominate bad teams. The Sox are a good team, and they reminded us of that. Over the weekend, the Cubs, same deal. They were at home. You have to beat the Pirates in the way that they beat them. What they did was announce or remind us that these are both playoff caliber baseball teams in Chicago, and we're lucky to watch playoff caliber baseball all season long, however long it may last, and let's hope it goes through the duration, because these are fun teams to watch. Similarities and differences, I think you hit on it, Mully, by saying, you know, you look at the team batting average for the Sox, you look at the home runs for the Cubs. They're deep, they're explosive, and they have offense galore. And I think it's more fun probably to watch the White Sox because they seem a little bit more explosive just because of the maybe guys we haven't seen do it before. Luis Robert at the top of the order gives you all sorts of possibilities when he and Eloy have four hits apiece. I mean, the Sox had three of their core prospects have four-hit games over the weekend, and it just shows you how capable they are of just scoring a ton of runs, with Grandal getting three hits yesterday as well. And then you look at the Cubs. How the DH has lengthened their lineup is something I think that tends to get overlooked, but they are really something with the amount of variety they can send up there. They did it without Chris Bryant. Look, yesterday, that was a lineup only a Madden could love. My goodness, David Bodie leading off, Josh Fegley behind the plate, and it didn't hurt them. So I think this is fun. Both teams look like they're capable of getting to the postseason if the season continues.
Mully, I was thinking the same thing as you were this morning with the adage of, you know, beating the teams that you're supposed to beat. Certainly Pittsburgh is one of the worst teams in all of baseball, and Kansas City is not a whole heck of a lot better. So you got to go in there and you, at the bare minimum, have to take two out of three. And as you guys kind of talked about a little bit on Friday, almost sort of expecting a sweep in the favor of both Chicago teams. And that's what happened. Both teams took care of business. A couple of the games were a little bit tighter than you might have expected, and certainly some more ninth-inning question marks for the Cubs, but it hasn't been a huge issue for them yet. We're still dealing with really small sample sizes, so we're going to see, hopefully, as these games are still able to be played, and you're going to see more guys and tighter situations, and you're going to see mixing and matching. I know David Ross was really happy with Dan Winkler, yesterday, so maybe that's a guy you're going to see getting thrown into a tighter situation. I don't think you're going to see Craig Kimbrell in a ninth inning the rest of this season. We've talked a lot about short leashes, and I think his might already be at its end, because what you saw from him on Friday was not any better than what you saw from him in his debut or all of last season. So I think, you know, obviously every team in baseball has strengths and weaknesses. The White Sox are probably going to score a lot of runs. I think their bullpen is mostly solid, but I still have questions about their starting pitching depth and what you're going to get from, you know, each guy day to day. And as far as the Cubs go, it's still, in my mind anyway, you have to worry about offensive consistency, because that's been one of the things that has plagued them for the past few seasons. And I'm not convinced yet about the depth of that bullpen either. But their starting pitching has been fantastic. A shout out to Tyler Chatwood, who looks like just a different guy. He looks like the guy the Cubs thought they were getting when they signed him a few years ago. And if he continues to pitch the way he does, and you get Hendricks, and you get John Lester, and you get Yu Darvish staying consistent, that could be a really, really formidable rotation. But it's all about consistency, and it's all about keeping up this level of play over the quote-unquote sprint.
I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. I don't want to get too excited too early. But what I wrote down was postseason bound. If the Cubs and the White Sox can continue to play at this level, they're headed to the postseason. And I understand the opponents were the Pirates and the Royals. But as you said, Mully, it's all about beating the teams that you are supposed to beat. And this was a sweep for both Chicago teams here. So, you know, look, the Cubs offense is showing up. We knew the White Sox are firing on all cylinders here. Bullpen, starting rotation, offense, everything is looking good for the White Sox. The thing you worry about, what my concerns for the Cubs is, for a lot of fans, was the offense being broken and not, you know, and just not showing up. The offense has been there. The starting rotation is looking good. Yes, there are concerns about the depth of this starting rotation, but they, for the most part, they've looked good. The bullpen, yes, as you said, Mully, is starting to look a little bit better for the Cubs, but this closer situation needs to be figured out. Rowan Wick came in over the weekend and did a good job. Maybe he's your future closer here. Maybe you figured that situation out. But if you can get Craig Kimbrell right, finally, maybe that's a huge plus. But figuring out this closer situation for the Cubs is going to be huge. But I'm seeing more similarities than weaknesses in these two teams.
Two teams that are taking it very seriously, seem to be doing all the right things on and off the field to keep themselves safe and playing solid baseball. They look like teams that want to be in the postseason, and we couldn't really ask for anything more. I think the similarity is both teams' offenses look really, really good. And I think both teams have an issue at the back end of the bullpen. And I don't know if that's breaking news from Kevin, but boy, to think that the goofy delivery armed closer for the Cubs won't pitch in a ninth inning again this year, that would be,
I mean, David Ross would have to be out of his mind. Are you kidding me?
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying,
I think, like, David Ross is a smart guy.
Yeah, I don't know if it's all David Ross's decision, though. We'll have to wait and see on that. That's something to keep an eye on this weekend.
I think the only person that should answer those questions is him.
The Cubs have been winning despite some shaky bullpen performances. Are they working through those issues or running in place? And if the season can continue, will the Cubs be haunted by their bullpen issues? Is it avoidable or inevitable?
Well, I think they made a good first step by not committing to Craig Kimbrell after his disastrous performance on Friday. That was something that, you know, you wonder about David Ross coming in, is how is he going to manage his friends? We've talked about it a lot. But that was an opportunity, whether it was him or what he was being told to say or being told to do. It really doesn't matter. You worried about him enabling a guy or continued to have patience when he hasn't really earned it. And Craig Kimbrell really hasn't earned it. He has been terrible as a Cub and giving up home runs at an alarming rate. And the other night was just one of those moments that we've seen too often before. And so I don't think the Cubs can afford to be patient with him in this context, because they don't have a strong bullpen. They're trying guys out. This feels like, you know, a 60-game season that is a 60-game audition for their bullpen, and it's going to continue that way. At least they're, you know, open to new ideas, and they're going to ride the hot hand, whoever that may be. I think that Jeffress was encouraging yesterday, gets the victory in 11. You have Rowan Wick. You have several guys, maybe two or three potentially, that you can mix and match. But I think if you are Craig Kimbrell, if you're the Cubs, either A, you find a role where he's not going to hurt you, and you find a way to let him work his way back if that's longer relief, if that's, you know, in the games that don't necessarily have high leverage situations, you know, five runs lead or deficit, and then you see what you have. But I don't think you put him in that situation again until it's not fair to everyone else. It's not fair to everyone else on the team, because, look, this is a guy with Hall of Fame credentials, but he certainly has not been that guy in Chicago, and you have to recognize that. And I think, to David Ross's credit, he has.
Yeah, look, I mean, Craig Kimbrell, those are two of the scariest words you're ever going to hear in baseball, and it's not because he's going to come out and intimidate anyone. It's because the home team is going to collapse, and my God, the reaction on Twitter to Craig Kimbrell on Friday was absolutely unbelievable. So they've got to figure out something. He was throwing 97 miles an hour, but there was no action on it, and there's obviously something seriously wrong, and he's trying to work his way through it, and they're going to try to help him. But I thought that Sunday's game was super important for the bullpen, and I get it. Pittsburgh, you know, they're not a great team. But they came into that game with almost a 10 ERA. I don't know what it was, but it was very high. And it was in the high nines, their bullpen ERA. And they got five innings if you count the extra innings, right? And that is huge for them. And that's going to build up some confidence. And, you know, Jeffers, you saw him. Ryan Tepera, I mean, that was very important for him to pitch well. So all the way around, I think that they've been, as you say, David, you said earlier, shuttling guys back and forth. They're working through what they have. They don't know what their bullpen is, and they're trying to figure it out and work their way through it. And that's really all you can do when you're bringing in new names and you're trying to find new roles and all the rest of it. So a very difficult situation going into the season, and pretty extraordinary they have the record they have.
Well, Mully, you're right. The name, the words Craig Kimbrell have always been, you know, two of the scariest words in baseball, but it used to be for a much different reason. It used to be he would frighten the team that he was going up against and not his own 24 or 29 teammates, I guess, in this instance. But it's just not going to work for him. And I don't see any sign that it would be turning around, and certainly the way that David Ross has spoken about it since Friday, it doesn't seem like they're, you know, putting a whole lot of confidence in him to retain that closer role, and you really can't afford to, because it's not the season where you can just kind of let a guy, you know, get the kinks worked out and let him get back into his groove and let him find himself during game situations. I could see, I mean, they're not going to, you know, put him on the IL or DFA him or anything like that. But why would you ever put him into a game when you're where you weren't leading by like six or seven runs? It just makes no sense to me. That might be the only time you see Craig Kimbrel in a ninth inning is if the Cubs are up by a substantial amount. You know, I think the bullpen issues are going to be something that poke up for the Cubs throughout the course of the season. We'll see as the competition gets a little bit better and as, you know, they're not putting up as many runs as they have been. Granted, yesterday was a tight game in extra innings where you saw a lot of hope. But, you know, back to the original question here, the Pittsburgh Pirates have one of the worst offenses in all of the bigs. You know, they're all major leaguers. They're professionals. They get paid too. But they're not exactly the toughest competition. So I just, you know, we need to see it for the next several weeks, and we need to see them play better teams and see if guys like Wick and Wink can step up and continue to do what they're doing. Jeffress was not a guy I put a lot of stock into coming into this year, but he's been pretty impressive in a small sample size. It's inevitable that there will be bumps in the road for the Cubs bullpen, but if the starting rotation can, you know, shorten these games and give you great performances and burn off a lot of the innings, it's going to go a long way into making the bullpen look better than it is.
It's still early, even though it's a short season. I'm going to say that the Cubs are working through their issues. They finally had five scoreless innings from their bullpen yesterday. How about that? You know, it's been rough. It's been rocky. But I think, you know, if you can get more games like yesterday, you're going to be okay, obviously. You know, if they can figure out the closer situation, maybe the answer is Rowan Wick or Jeffress, or you just got to figure these things out. They're figuring it out as they go, as only as they can, you know, figuring it out on the fly. I don't want to say that they're going to be haunted by their bullpen issues just yet, but they have to figure this out. They have to figure out who is dependable in this bullpen, who they can go to. The starting rotation is looking good. So hopefully, you know, you don't have too many. Hopefully you'll get longer outings out of your starters now. We're getting to the third time through the rotation here. They're just going to have to figure this out. I don't want to say they're going to be haunted just yet.
Sadler, Winkler, Tapera, Jeffress. I mean, who are these guys? Who are these guys? I mean, it's crazy. You have to go. You're throwing these names into the Google machine as they're coming out. Where did they come from? What's their background? Are they old enough to shave? Where they all look like they look a bunch of little kids out there. It's crazy. This is going to be very fluid. It's going to be very fluid, and it's going to be on obviously David Ross and our guy Tommy Hotovy and Theo and Jed to really just keep throwing arms out there, see who can do what and when. And listen, it's with everything going on, this is a game by game by game, win each game that's in front of you, do the best you can. Listen, if you get into a postseason, and we talked about it in the first question, both teams are aiming towards the postseason, then yes, I'm worried. But they've got 40-ish games to figure it out, so let's figure it out.
Your question is very intuitive.
The White Sox rookie class is making an impact. What stands out to you about the group? Is Luis Robert leading off for good, or will that change when Tim Anderson returns? And what about Nick Madrigal? Is he a lineup mainstay?
Boy, you know, a lot there about the White Sox. I got to tell you, the rookie class has been spectacular. And I mean, that includes a couple of relievers, right? Didn't Matt Foster get his first career victory? Cody Hoyer didn't get the baseball from his first career save because it went missing somehow. They couldn't find it. So he said, that's fine. I'll get one for my second. So it's good to see the young guys coming up. Obviously, Luis Robert is the star of stars. And I would leave him at leadoff. I think he's perfect in that spot. And I think that, Tim, you can move later in the lineup. It gives you a huge boost to have a guy like that making sure that, you know, he can follow kind of the formula he followed last year when he had the batting average, the best batting average in the American League. So I think it just makes you more dangerous to have him at the top of the order, and I would leave him there. And he is spectacular. I mean, you know, everybody is saying it, but every time you see him play, there is something that jumps out at you about him. He is a guy that flashes in every game, sometimes spectacularly, other times it's just, oh, wait, look at that play. But he just is a exceptional talent, and it's there for you. As far as Madrigal is concerned, I would make him a lineup mainstay. I don't think I would have said that if he didn't have the four-hit game. And I don't even know he needed four hits, but he did need a couple. He just needed to show you that he can get the bat on the ball. And it was worrisome when he comes up and he doesn't get a hit for right away. You know, you just worry about a guy's mentality. But he does a lot of really intuitive things. You know, the fact that he went from first to third on a single because the minute the ball was hit, he had a sense it was going to happen, and he was right. So I think there's a lot of things to like about this rookie class. The biggest one is that we're going to watch them grow up together, and that's pretty astounding.
I think the thing that stands out, generally speaking, about all of them is just the poise. You know, they look like they belong, and there's never been a doubt. They carry themselves with the confidence that you might expect for guys who are at the top of the prospect list, but that is obvious. And Madrigal walked in and didn't really, even though he struggled, you got a sense that he was a gamer. And I like what Rick Renteria said over the weekend at one point, maybe after the first game, but he's going to be the guy that is written into his lineup. He plans on playing him every day. And then yesterday you saw finally him exhale and some reasons to hope and to see why they like him so much. Robert at the top of the order makes a lot of sense because he's so dangerous, and I wouldn't mess around with that. If Tim Anderson comes back, you could figure out a way to work him, and nobody's going to complain, given all of the weapons the White Sox have, about Tim Anderson batting lower in the lineup this year. That's just not going to be something that I think is worth complaining about, especially if it is to make room for Luis Robert as a leadoff hitter, as dynamic as he can be. And we saw Saturday with his four hits and the homer and the two doubles and just the way he runs. He's got speed and power and everything else that is very obvious. I think the White Sox take a lot of pride in the fact that they have four Cuban players at the top of the order. They tweeted that out. They said it's the first time in history that's happened. The Cuban quad, if you will, with Robert and Mancada and Abreu and Grandal. And that's a pretty fearsome foursome, and I don't know that I would change that. So I think that when Tim Anderson comes back, you've got a tremendous problem if you're Ricky Renteria, and if you're the White Sox, you have a couple rookies immediately that look like guys who are going to be here for a very long time.
Well, I'll answer the second part first. I don't think there's any question that Nick Madrigal needs to be a lineup mainstay, and it's not just because he had four hits yesterday. He should have been on the opening day roster starting at second base, and they were screwing with his service time, and that's the only reason he wasn't here. So he should have already been there from day one, and I'm glad he's there now, not only for his bat, but for his defense as well. He's going to play a much better second base than Leury Garcia or Danny Mendick are going to give you there defensively. So no question about that. As far as Luis Robert, he's been unbelievable. And it seems like it hasn't been, not lately at least, that a White Sox touted prospect will come up and just instantly be good. There's always kind of been that grace period or acclimation period or whatever you want to call it, whether it's Moncada or Eloy or certainly Giolito went through it for about a year. They've always kind of had rocky starts, so it's nice, it's refreshing as a White Sox fan to just have a guy come up and just be an absolute stallion right off the bat and do every single thing possible on a baseball field. I don't know if he is a leadoff hitter. He is an aggressive young man at the plate. He's only walked a couple times this year. He's swinging at the first pitch almost every single time he's up there. Granted, if he's hitting the ball and he's getting on base somehow, then, you know, maybe walking isn't as important. But I don't know if long-term that's where he's going to be. He needs to be hitting first, second, third, fourth, somewhere in that order. I don't know if leadoff is the spot for him. I never thought Tim Anderson was a leadoff man either, though. So that's another question there. Look, as long as these guys are continuing to score runs and be dynamic and do the things that they have been doing, it's going to be a really, really fun team to watch and it's been a lot of fun, particularly the last 3 days.
Well, what I'll say about the White Sox rookie class is that they've got the swag and they can back it up on the field, actually. Luis Robert hitting leadoff, that's, I mean, you want to stick with that. The guy gets a home run, four hits. Why would you change that? It's one game, but keep the kid up there at the top of the lineup. This seems like it could be a formula for success, even more success here for the White Sox. And in terms of Nick Madrigal, is he a lineup mainstay? Yes, this is his first. He just got through his first series, had a four-hit game yesterday. Hell yes, Nick Madrigal is a mainstay.
They're fun to watch. They're almost must-see television. You want to get in front of the television and watch these guys play. I like the fact that they're almost have like a competition amongst themselves to who can be the best of the group. I think that is healthy and good. The week is starting off already on a bad foot, and it's only 5:47. I actually agree with Kevin again. I think Robert should bat second, and I think you put Tim Anderson back at first. I don't think all of a sudden Tim Anderson should come back from an injury and bat sixth or seventh. That's a nice issue to have. We all like to play lineup Easta, and we'll continue to do that. But yeah, the Sox are the Sox young core is really good, and I'm glad that Madrigal isn't 0-for-12 this morning and is 4-for-12 instead.
That's a good question, David.
The Blackhawks won their playoff opener against Edmonton. What was your biggest takeaway from that game, and how will it impact tonight's game too? Will this be a short series, or is it going the distance?
I said Hawks in five. I still think it's going to be Hawks in five, but boy, was Saturday so much fun. I mean, you saw Kubalik being the rookie with 5 points, setting a record. You saw the Hawks for the first time since 2016 win a playoff game, and you felt like you have seen this before, and it was very mixed between excitement and nostalgia, because it felt like the good old days of when the Blackhawks over the past decade used to do this all the time, and they knew how to win playoff games. They knew how to rise to the occasion and elevate their level of play, and that's exactly what they did. Jonathan Toews had this team ready to go, and the Oilers were very, talented offensive team. They kept the puck away from them. That's how you beat them. They were smart. For the most part, the Hawks stayed out of the box, except for the early on when they went in there and they gave up a goal and it was 1-0. And I started to think, oh boy, oh boy. And then they came out and they scored and they scored and they scored again. And it was 6-2. And then it was just holding on. And I'll say this, you saw Kubalik, you saw Toews, you saw a lot of things that really were fun to see in terms of developments. Brandon Saad, you could look at a lot of different guys. But a couple weeks ago, guys, Corey Crawford was fighting the coronavirus. And there he was Saturday in net for the Blackhawks, saving pucks and stopping shots and doing what he needed to do. Just being there made an impact on this team. And when he is there, they're a different team. And as long as he stays there, they will be a contender. They will have a chance. And that was the best thing about Saturday. You ended watching the Blackhawks after 3 hours of excitement. This team's got a shot, and that's fun.
Boy, I got to tell you, that Blackhawks game was so exciting. And they go down a goal. You know, you're sitting there. We knew all about the advantage on special teams. We knew all about the power play of Edmonton and how you got to stay out of the penalty box. And, you know, we had talked about all those things. And the Hawks, I thought, started out pretty strong. And then they give up a goal on the power play. And you're sitting there like, oh, my God, this is, you know, this could be a disaster because that power play is so good from Edmonton, best in the league. And then, boom, it's like three goals right away. I mean, it was just phenomenal to watch the explosiveness of the Blackhawks and really to see the Toews line do what they did against Connor McDavid, right? I mean, they've got to be – he's under huge pressure in this game tonight, I would say, because he was shown up in that first game, and we'll see how this NHL superstar responds, and I would imagine he will respond, and I imagine that they will respond. But again, it's the same thing. Stay out of the penalty box. Don't let them – if you stay 5-on-5, the Blackhawks are the better team. And I saw a statistic that the Oilers had – you know, they didn't average very many hits during the regular season, but they doubled that, more than doubled it in that game, and that's probably because they didn't have the puck, and they were in trouble. And, I thought the Blackhawks were just, it was just fantastic. Dominic Kubalik, holy cow. There's somebody with this organization that is looking at international players and sees who's good and who isn't, because they keep signing these guys and bringing these guys in who end up being spectacular. And he was absolutely fantastic. And it was great to see. And Taser, it's great to see him score. So I think there's a lot of excitement with the Blackhawks' performance. But I do think you, again, just don't let that team get on the power play. And you're going to win this series. Period. End of story.
Yeah, Kubalik, unbelievable. You know, he looked like Louis Robert out there the way he was just dominating on Saturday. Chicago could have two rookies of the year in 2020. Listen, the Hawks have nothing to lose, and they played like it on Saturday. All the pressure was on Edmonton. They fell flat on their faces. The Hawks are in a great spot now, and I think one big takeaway for me is that, you score six goals and Patrick Kane didn't even get on the board. You're going to have a big Patrick Kane game at some point in this series. And the fact that you're already out now 1-0 up in the series without having that inevitable Kane game, that's almost one you can bank for the future. So it couldn't have started any better for the Hawks on Saturday.
Biggest takeaway is Dominik Kubalik. He became the first player in NHL history to record 5 points in his postseason debut. And the first rookie in NHL history to record 3 points in the first period of his postseason debut. What I'm looking for now is for this kid to make an impact on game two. That was my biggest takeaway from the first game. And it's going to be a series that goes the distance for sure.
So much fun. And what also made it great was, like, I felt terrible when the Hawks went down 1-0. I was kind of slamming and bamming, moved around the house, was so unhappy about it, and it felt good again to have a pulse with live sports going on. And then the rally was on. It was like I had to shut the windows. I was screaming and yelling and was so excited about it. The only bummer is now is that it's a 9:30 puck drop tonight, and I almost feel like I got to treat it like a Bears Monday Night Football game where I might actually have to take a nap this afternoon in order to catch any of that game. But listen, if they play the way they played on Saturday afternoon and Edmonton sleepwalks, this thing could be done very quickly. And, Mully, I think you're absolutely right. The Blackhawks are the better of the two teams.
Before you go with your question, could you embellish on that?
Illinois basketball star Io DeSumo withdrew from the 2020 NBA draft just before the deadline, and Kofi Coburn also followed suit. Are the Illini now a legitimate NCAA title contender?
They moved in the CBS power rankings from unranked to number 7. I think the third best team in the Big Ten, according to them, just by having these guys come back. It's huge for Illinois, and it is a it's going to be a really good team. Io is a sensational player. The CBS thing says that they could have the best 1-2 punch in the country. That's how good these guys are. So that's great to see. And again, when you go from unranked to number 7, I think that's a huge statement about the impact that these guys can have. So yeah, I think they're a contender for the national championship. But then, again, I think the Ramblers are. They're bringing back their entire team and they're adding to it. And I think they're going to be a really dangerous team. Maybe they'll meet Illinois in the Final Four. By the way, congratulations to Loyola. They picked up a couple of signings for their next class, not next year, but the year after. Ben Scheiger, is that the kid's name, from Waubonsie Valley, and Ty Johnson from DePaul Prep. So they're still recruiting, and they're going to have life after this group is done. So should be a lot of fun.
Go Ramblers.
Thank you, buddy.
Okay, back to Illinois. I think that...
See what I did there?
Yeah, I see what you did there. I'm not taking the bait, though. Very clever. Look, what you felt as an Illini fan last March was deprived. You had a chance to see a good young team, 20 victories. They captured the excitement, and Io and Coburn and these guys were really something together. And you wondered if you'd ever see them in a tournament situation. And let's hope that that's the case and they come back and – we played an entire college basketball season because this is a legitimate top 10 team. I don't think anybody can tell you that they are necessarily a Final Four caliber team, but you certainly can't tell me that they aren't either. So they're right in that mix of the kind of Big Ten team that you like to see, deep and talented with two difference makers like these guys, with a coach that is thinking big and, you know, has really made a nice impact there. So they are legitimate NCAA title contender as much as anybody at the top of the Big Ten. That includes Iowa. They got good news yesterday as well when Garza decided to come back. He's a National Player of the Year candidate. But let's look at Illinois. Yeah, Io coming back. I think he said he was 99.9% sure he was going to stay in the draft. And then the uncertainty surrounding everything with college basketball and everything with the pre-draft process brought him back to Champaign, and then Kofi followed. So that's what leaders do. I think it was the smart decision. That you could make the other argument and say, you know what, take the money and see what's out there. I would understand and respect that. But I think that he's trying to go back and do something special. And let's hope that they stay healthy. Let's hope that they get a season. And let's hope that the Illini finally get an opportunity in March to do what they wanted to do last year.
Yeah, it's fantastic news, David, and you're right. They were deprived last season because we all thought that maybe they could make a run in the NCAA tournament. Obviously, that never took place. So being able to run it back with, you know, two of the better players in the Big Ten, I think it's huge. The Big Ten is always going to be really tough, and they're always going to beat up on each other on the way to the tournament. But Illinois, legitimate title contender. I don't know if I'd go that far quite yet. But they have set themselves up in a fantastic position. It's really good news.
Well, I will say it. I think they're going to be a title contender. We're short on time here, so this is the easiest question in the morning. Hell yes.
All right, for everybody out there listening this morning, ILL. Hopefully they said INI. This is great news. It's very exciting. I love college basketball. Felt deprived and ripped off, missing an NCAA tournament, but I understand why it happened. And Garza coming back to Iowa, that makes those Iowa-Illinois matchups that's always bad blood, that's going to be must-see TV.
312-644-6767. That's the telephone number. Mully and Haw on the score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.